Hello again, Bernie Miklas back with you. I hope you all had a wonderful weekend. Welcome to a new week of the Bernie Miklas Show here on YouTube. Thank you for subscribing. Please can subscribe if you're passing through, and feel free to leave comments, and we appreciate it when you also hit that like button. Today, I wanted to talk about Oscar Tavares. Because his name came up again recently. John Mozeliak's interview with Marty Kilcoyne, our friend from Fox 2 News, and of course, now part of the morning show at 101 ESPN. And we've all talked about Oscar Tavares, how, you know, Tavares dying at age 22 after a very brief time as a Cardinal and dying under just horrific circumstances because it was a senseless tragedy. It could have been prevented, could have been avoided. You know, he was driving while drunk. He was terribly drunk, and he died and also killed his girlfriend in a wreck down in the Dominican Republic. And it was just such a stunning, sad, tragic thing. And so it left us all wondering about, you know, once we get past the grief of you know, two young lives being lost and in such a way where you just, and I've been there, trust me, where you just look back at some of the things you did as a kid and you're just like, I can't believe I was that careless. You know, I think most honest people got to be honest to, you know, own up to the fact we've probably all been in that kind of situation where we were very, very blessed and fortunate not to have anything bad happen in terms of hurting someone else or ourselves. But once you get past the shocking end of a life, the way that Oscar Tavares and his girlfriend died, you know, it's natural to think about, well, what might have been for him as a career, because he was highly hyped. I mean, he was really touted. He was going to be the next Cardinals star. And I'm talking about hitters. I'm not talking about pitchers. The next Cardinal star, you know, Albert Pujols' final season as a Cardinal the first time around, 2011. And the Cardinals didn't have a lot coming up. They did have some stuff coming up. I mean, they had some players. Sorry, I take that back. They had some players that became all-star players, but not as many as you think. And we're talking about homegrown players. So it was a shocking loss. And as the years have gone by, and I know that some of you have said this in the comment section under the videos, and it's a legitimate thing to talk about, obviously. The fact that, you know, if you look at where the Cardinals maybe began to lose the touch or just not have a successor, not that there's ever a true successor to Albert Pujols. You know what I'm talking about, the context. But the next great Cardinals hitter, the guy who would be rack up all kinds of all-star games, maybe win an award, lead the Cardinals to greatness again, that kind of thing. Those were all the hopes and dreams that the Cardinals and their fans had for Oscar Tavares. And so it's easy to go back and say, well, that's kind of where all of this, it took a while to really kick into effect, but that's where all of this was sort of a turning point for the Cardinals and their inability to produce the next star hitter. Now, Mason Wynn, we all know, homegrown player, has got a chance to be really special. So I think they have a guy like that in development, even though he's a big leaguer and he won the Fielding Bible Award for best defensive shortstop. He did not win the Gold Glove Award. I may be back to do a video on that later. But we all like Mason Wynn, and I think he's going to be a star. He's kind of a star already. But there's a couple things I want to get into on this because it's an interesting topic, and I think that I have mixed feelings about this idea that he would have been the next great Cardinal hitter to lead them into the future, where they had their nucleus guy, they had their catalyst, they had someone that you could build around, and he would be the hub in the middle of it, leading the way, right? It's a nice thought, and believe me, I hyped Oscar Tavares as much as anyone in the media. I was really excited when he came up. And he was a Cardinal for a very brief time, but it's pretty amazing if you think about what he did in that brief time. If you subtract the time he came up on May 31st of 2014, he did get sent down to Memphis, back to Memphis, maybe about 12 days later. And then he came up again, I believe, July 1st. If you just count the time that he was actually on the 25-man roster in St. Louis, And you add seven postseason games to this, because he was on the postseason roster. He was a Cardinal for 120 days. And his career consisted of 80 regular season games and seven postseason games. So 87 games, 120 days. But the first time he played a game at Busch Stadium, what did he do? You know what he did. He hit a home run. I'll never forget how exciting that was. First of all, it was almost like something out of a movie, because he hit the home run, and it's, remember, it was raining. Those of you that were there, it was very picturesque and very cinematic almost. You know, the ball hits it to right, and it's just towering, and it's coming down through the rain. He hit it into the rain, and it goes over the rain. I mean, it was really a beautiful moment. And I'll never forget Cardinals manager. I was wanting to look down in the dugout from the press box just to see the reaction. And Mike Matheny, the manager of the team, was just beside himself. And he's looking up. I'll never forget. I'm saying, what's he looking at? It's like, oh, yeah, well, Mo's right over there. He looked up at John Mozeliak and just kind of like had a huge smile on his face and was laughing and kind of threw up his hands like, can you believe this kid did that? And Mo was very, very happy that day, too, because they thought he was going to be very, very special. So the first game ever at Busch Stadium, he hits a home run, right? The last game Oscar Tavares played at Busch Stadium, he hit a home run. That was in game two of the National League Championship Series against the Giants. The Cardinals they lost the first game. They were in trouble. They had to win the second game. And the second game was really one of those suspenseful games. And it was starting to get late and the Cardinals were trailing, and he hit a solo home run, Tavares did, to tie it up. And then Colton Wong won it on a walk-off. And the Cardinals went out to San Francisco, was tied 1-1. You had like their chances of at least making this a big, long series. And then they lost three in a row out there. But the first game at Busch, home run. Last game at Busch, home run. It's pretty amazing, really, that happened. And it just left us all wondering, you know, what could have been. What might have been, what could have been. This could have been the guy that would have just been at the center of their universe offensively for a long time. But we'll never know. And let me read you something that John Mozeliak said in the interview with Marty Kilcoyne. And, you know, he sort of circles that time, the tragic death of Oscar Tavares, as something of a turning point for the Cardinals, or something of an opportunity and a belief in him that Tavares would be a very special Cardinal, a very special hitter. The fact that was terminated in the worst possible way through the death of Oscar Tavares and his girlfriend. Mozeliak told Marty Kilcoyne in an interview last week, Fox 2 News, quote, I think the biggest thing is you have to end up having that impact type player, meaning Tavares. And when you think back to, and I can use my time as an experience, I can also reflect on what I see other teams doing. But we had Albert Pujols for a decade, and we could then build around it. And then you think back to 2013, and we had young Mr. Tavares emerging, and we thought he would be that type of impact bat. He passes away. I think that's when things really shifted for us, because we didn't have anything coming up on the pipeline. And that's true, because the guys that during the Jeff Luhno time, the guys that were here that were, you know, chosen, signed, drafted, developed, whatever, by the Cardinals, there were a lot of really good players. We've talked about it in this space, and I don't want to review all the names, but there's a lot of good players who played a major role in that, for example, the 2011 team that won a World Series. However, if you look at position players, again, we're not talking about pitchers here. If you look at position players during the Bill DeWitt time as the owner, it's 29 years. It began in 1996. Here are the Cardinals' position players other than Pujols and Molina. And by the way, that's kind of like, well, other than them. Between the two of them, as Cardinals, they made 20 All-Star games, the last being Albert Pujols in his final year here in St. Louis in 2022. I think Molina's final All-Star appearance was not that long before that, maybe 2021. Correct me. I didn't look that up. But those two racked up 20 All-Star appearances as Cardinals. That's a lot. But other than that, there's not a whole heck of a lot to point to. Ray Lankford in 1997 was a homegrown Cardinals All-Star, National League All-Star. Then you had Alan Craig in 2013. Then Matt Carpenter in 2014 and 2016. Then you had Aledmys Diaz in 2016. They signed him out of Cuba. And he got off to a slow start in the minors, but he came of age and had a really good rookie season and became a National League All-Star in 2016. And then the last guy, the last Cardinals position player, homegrown drafted developed player, is Paul DeJong in 2019. That's the last time a homegrown player, the position player for the Cardinals, made the All-Star team. That's a long time ago already, right? It hasn't happened since 2019. So there absolutely has been a void. There has been a hole in the lineup that they haven't been able to fill, or a hole in right field that they haven't been able to fill, because Oscar Tavares would have been their right fielder. Oh, could they have used him in left a little bit? Sure, but they didn't when he was here because they had Matt Holliday, but also they loved Oscar Tavares' arm and thought he was a natural in right field. He played a little bit in center field, but he wasn't going to be a center fielder. He was a right fielder. So they had a hole in the, because of his death, they had a hole in the lineup, or at least what they thought he would do. It left a huge void, based on what they thought he would do, their expectations of what he would do. And then, of course, it created a big hole in their outfield, and one that they're still trying to solve the outfield all these years later. But I have to talk about this a little bit. And my purpose here is, the last thing I'm trying to do is to disparage the memory of Oscar Tavares. I'm not trying to be negative. I'm not at all. But I also don't want to sit here and say, you know, yeah, if Oscar Tavares hadn't gotten drunk and driven and met such a tragic fate and killed himself and his girlfriend that day down in the DR, yeah, he would have been a great one. He would have been one of the all-time great Cardinals, or if not one of the all-time greats, he would have been a multiple-time All-Star, a guy that pitchers feared, a guy that could carry your team for weeks at a time. And based on, and again, I've already talked about this, he was only a Cardinal 87 games if you count the postseason in 2014. So that's not enough to go on, and it's a small sample, and I'm just saying that. I recognize all that. But there were still some things about his brief time in the majors that make you wonder a little bit if people like me at the time, who were, you know, big time hyping up Oscar Tavares, it makes me wonder, and I've thought about it a lot through the years, because talking to some people about it who were teammates or on the scene for sure, there was a question whether he would ever have developed into that guy. I think there's kind of an assumption that he would have. I'm just saying I'm not as sure as others are. Because the first thing, and the first person that I talked to about this, and again, this is in real time. This is in real time. This isn't like years later, back in 2014, was Tim McCarver. And Tim McCarver made the point, and I don't think McCarver was as enthralled with Tavares as the way most people in the media were. And of course, he's got the eye of a former big league catcher and a damn good one and a Cardinal Hall of Famer. But I remember I was talking to McCarver. I said, you know, he's just up here, you know, and he's a baby and he hasn't faced major league pitching before. So everyone's got their own rate of progress. Sometimes it doesn't happen right away, but I said, I'm just surprised to see so many ground balls and a lot of weak contact. I just thought if nothing else, he'd be hitting the ball hard a lot, maybe swinging and missing a lot, maybe striking out too much at first, but he doesn't hit the ball hard. And McCarver said, well, he can't hit a fastball. And I said, what? He said, he can't hit a fastball. They're just overpowering. And McCarver said, look, you know, he can catch up. I mean, he's got to adjust to major league pitching. But what I see is a guy who cannot hit a fastball. And that could be a big problem for him. And that caught my attention. Because if you can't hit a fastball in the major leagues, that's the first thing they – When a kid comes up, first thing they do is like, well, let's see if the young hero here can hit a fastball. And they'll keep throwing you fastballs until you prove not a good idea to throw him a fastball, but that was never the case in Oscar Tavares's brief time here in the majors. Let me go to a couple notes here. You know, it's amazing looking back on, and I did some research this morning, it's amazing to see just how many fastballs they did throw him. Overwhelming percentage of fastballs compared to breaking pitches, off-speed pitches. And they kept throwing him fastballs because he couldn't hit them very well. Not at all, actually. Well, I should say that. He did get some hits, but he was very much overmatched by fastballs. Now, we can assume that that would have changed. We can assume it. But could we have absolutely counted on that? I'm going to say no, but also leaving out an expectation that he would have improved. Again, I'm trying to be fair here. I'm not trying to do, you know, Mr. Hot Take. Oh, he would have been an utter failure in the big leagues. No, I'm not saying that. But he really struggled with the fastball. And if you look at it, and I got to get to my numbers here, it was pretty glaring. And in fact, today, this morning, was the first day that I ever actually researched this. I went to Brooks Baseball Net, which is a good pitch tracking site. And they threw the pitchers when in Tavares as a rookie in 2014, nearly 68% of the pitches thrown to him were hard pitches. There's three categories, hard, breaking pitches, and off-speed pitches. So they pumped, when we say hard stuff, we're talking about primarily the fastball and the sinker. And there's other different categories, of course, you know, for breaking balls and off speed. So I'm being redundant. I'll shut up now. So they kept throwing him those pitches. They kept throwing him the hard stuff, and he had a hard time with it. He was seen, again, almost 68% of the time. And this includes the postseason as well. And he hit 229 against hard pitches, fast pitches, 229. And his slugging percentage was only 255. In fact, he never had an extra base hit on a hard pitch, on a fast pitch. All three of his home runs were on off-speed pitches, including the one in the postseason. I have a story on that here in a moment. So if you look, if you break it down by like four-seam fastballs, 65 at-bats, too small of a sample, but this is all we have to go on, 65 at-bats. Four-seam fastballs, he hit 169, and he had 11 singles, and no extra base hits. If you look at the sinker, he actually hit that for a pretty good average. Power was okay, but still a lot of singles. And we go right on down the list. He didn't hit the slider very well, and I don't want to just keep reading all these things. Did not hit the cutter well at all. He got a few split fastballs to hit, and he did okay with them, but he didn't get many of them. So all three of his home runs were on off-speed stuff, right? And pitchers were just constantly challenging him on with fastballs because he struggled with fastballs, as Tim McCarver correctly noted. And with those fastballs was a lot of soft contact and a lot of ground balls. He had a very high ground ball rate. So there's that. And I remember – I've told this story on the radio, and I remember asking some people about this when he hit that huge home run in game two of the NLCS, Oscar Tavares. I was about 99.9% sure that it was a changeup. And, but you know, I'm typing away and I'm looking at this and looking at that. I in those days we didn't have StatCast where we could see immediately. If we couldn't tell for sure with our eyes, we could see immediately what kind of pitch it was. So all you do is you have your screen open during games and you can see it like it's play-by-play. It's easy to track, easier than ever. So I remember going in the clubhouse and I remember talking to Adam Wainwright about this. I said, that was a changeup, right? I said, I don't trust my own eyes, so I just wanted to go to the expert. And Waino said, oh, yeah, it was a changeup. And he says, you know, it's kind of funny. Because we've seen Albert hit changeups, not Albert, pardon me. We've seen Oscar Tavares hit fastballs pretty well. He stings them. Listen, I'm screwing this all up. My bad. Wainwright was saying we've seen Oscar Tavares really hit off speed stuff, but you know he's still trying to catch up with fastballs, so he's kind of vulnerable to fastballs, and so. You know how all the pitchers are at the rail and they're watching the game and they're into it. And Adam Wainwright said to me, at that point, he said, you know, in fact, he said, you know what we were doing. And he said this all just because he loved the fact of what happened. He said, all the pitchers standing on the rail were like, please throw him a changeup. 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 And he got a changeup and hit a home run, a huge home run in that game. Played a major role to tie, well, did tie the score, and it also set up the eventual game-winning walk-off by Colt Wong. So I asked Waino kind of a follow-up, and he said, well, yeah, you know, he just had a hard time with fastballs. And I don't know why, you know, because he was saying, you know, we pitchers, we always look at like, even our own hitters because we're thinking like pitchers the whole time. And we're just like, man, I just keep pounding fastball. I wouldn't throw him a changeup. That's doing him a huge favor. He said, so we were just like, please, please throw him a changeup. And they did. And that just fits into the narrative, whether the narrative would have been borne out over time or it was just premature to make it a narrative. We'll never know. But I'll never forget that story with Waino, even though I botched it by bringing up Albert Pujols for some reason. Waino talking about, you know, those guys saying, please throw him a changeup, please. And I think the pitcher on that day was Pettit or Petit. And Oscar knew what to do with it. Cinematic moment again, too, because it was fireworks going off. It was really great. So we don't know. I just can't simply assume he would have been the great hitter that the Cardinals were hoping and believing that he would be, right? And the other thing, and I just write this off to immaturity, he was a very immature 22 years old. Again, this is not me trying to disparage the deceased. That's not it at all. But we're talking about the whole experience. He was a very raw guy. And when he came up, now, some of you, I'm going to anticipate some pushback on this. It's like, well, he's just a kid, you know, and he's from the DR. And it's like he's just learning to be a pro. And he hadn't been in the majors before, you know, give him a break type thing. In principle, I agree. But that doesn't change what his teammates thought of him. They thought he was very immature. They thought he didn't really know how to handle himself. They thought that there were some concerns there about his lack of maturity and whether he was serious enough and whether he understood, you know, what it means to be a Major League Baseball player. And I know that some of the veteran players were really put off by him simply because they've seen kids come and they've seen kids go. And they know no two kids, rookies, are alike, especially at age 22. They're all on a different maturity curve, right? But he was about the bottom of the curve as far as his maturity, and he was a bit of a wild guy. So it just makes you wonder, and I'm not just saying this because now we know how it ended for him. That would be a cheap and easy way for me to say something like, see the some of the teammates who were worrying about him, they I guess they knew what they were seeing, some stuff that really alarmed them. Maybe so, but they were saying that whether Oscar Tavares would have never gotten in that car that day in the DR, that was still their view of him. He was kind of wild. It was like, boy, this guy just doesn't get it, does he? So he kind of drove the veterans nuts. And but I remember talking to a couple of them, and they were like, listen, man, you know, people, sometimes it takes a while for kids to grow up. We're talking to him. We're on him. You know, we're trying to teach him. We're trying to make sure he understands there are standards here. There are times to be really loud in the clubhouse and boisterous and running around and kind of joking and playing pranks. There's a time and a place for it because we like to do that too. But he never seems to know when the proper time is for that kind of thing. So again, some of you want to push back on that. Go ahead. I don't care. I'm telling you what I was told at the time. Okay. I'm passing that along because one advantage even for my own, I'm talking about for my own benefit, is I sort of have that institutional knowledge and I go way back in history and I was there so I can tell you the stories from that specific time. There were some doubts about him hitting the fastball and whether the maturity level would kick in because it was something that left some of the teammates and Mike Matheny a little bit concerned. I'm being polite. Concerned. We'll never know. Sadly, tragically, we'll never know. So that's part one there. Number two, I got to say this, and I think many of you will agree with me on this. Oscar Tavares, if we're just putting it in baseball years, right? He perished 10 baseball seasons ago at the end of the 2014 seasons. He had 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24. That's 10 seasons have gone by. So John Mozeliak also said this in answering that question to with Marty Kilcoyne. He said, meaning that they lost their next superstar hitter. They believe firmly that he would be that, Oscar Tavares. So Mo said, so what did we end up doing? We ended up going out and trading for Ozuna, trading for Goldschmidt, trading for Arenado. I think what it tells you is it's hard to build a team strictly based on trades and free agency. Absolutely true there. Absolutely true. And that's why what Bill DeWitt did in going out and getting Chaim Bloom, that's why I'm so excited about it, because that move to bring in someone that can give you one of the best player development systems, where you have your homegrown players coming up all the time, forming a foundation of your roster that you then supplement by making trades and spending money on some free agents. You got to have that foundation, a homegrown foundation. And so Mo is absolutely right when he says, I think it what tells you it's hard to build a team strictly based on trades and free agency. That's what Bill DeWitt told me right after he hired Luno, the reason why he hired Luno. The same thing Mo said right then. So Mo continued, part two of that quote is, quote, you organically need to be producing some level or some really elite level of talent. And, you know, unfortunately, in that time period, we just haven't been able to do it. It's kind of exciting to see somebody like a Mason Winn emerge. Is he going to be that generational type of player that creates that kind of change? Time to tell. We'll tell. But based on what we saw after this past year, it certainly feels like a pretty good place to start. But Mozeliak concluded, ultimately, you need that sort of bat that sits in the middle of the lineup that you can build around. So I agree. He's not wrong in his assessment. But where I get a little cranky about this, and listen, Mozeliak's owning up to it. You know, we just haven't been able to do it. I mean, I read that to you, but it's, again, unfortunately, in this time period, we just haven't been able to do it. And he's admitting to the failing. So, yeah, you can say what you want. I mean, you can you know, slap him around, metaphorically speaking, if you want. But he is owning up to the failure. So where I'm a little cranky about this, though, is it's been 10 baseball seasons. And I see some people talking about this and, you know, who do what I do for a living. And there's like this sympathetic take on this. Not like no one's writing or saying, oh, well, poor Cardinals, poor Mozeliak. You know, they lost a guy that was their future superstar. But people are making the assumption that he would have been a superstar, number one. And number two, just kind of ignoring, or not ignoring, downplaying is a better word, the fact that there's been 10 baseball seasons have gone by. So even though John Mozeliak acknowledged the organizational failure, it still is very distressing to realize, listen, they had a long time to find their right fielder that would be in the middle of their lineup and someone that they could build around, right? And it's, I went through this, and I'm going to try to give you the short version. In 2000, they made the Jason Hayward trade. That was their right fielder. They made it specifically after losing Tavares. Hayward was acquired from Atlanta. Yeah, they gave up Shelby Miller. And listen, Shelby Miller had a relatively short career as an elite starter after that. So Hayward was their primary right fielder in 2015. The following year, it was Stephen Piscotty. In 2017, the guy that played the most in right field was Stephen Piscotty. In 2018, Dexter Fowler actually played more in right field than he played in center. They signed him to that big free agent contract. Fowler was their primary right fielder, or more than anyone else, in 2018. And, or I should say 2018 he was, and then again in 2019. And then also in 2020. Now, they were playing some other guys in right field during that time, but But the guy that played the most out there was Dexter Fowler, 18, 19, and 20. In 2021, the right fielder that played the most was Dylan Carlson. In 2022, it was Lars Nootbaar. In 23, it was Jordan Walker with some Lars Nootbaar. And in 24, it was Nootbaar, 234 plate appearances out there, but he couldn't stay healthy. So it has been one huge shuttle system. So if I count up in terms of plate appearances playing right field, just right field, right, since the passing of Oscar Tavares, it's Piscotty over 1,000 plate appearances, Fowler nearly 800 plate appearances, Carlson about 720, Nootbaar 700, Hayward 576, Walker 532, Jose Martinez 511. So those were the guys in all these ensuing years had 500 or more plate appearances as the right fielder. And there were some other guys that got a pretty good run out there, like Randall Grichuk. And I mentioned Jose Martinez. And then you look at the list down near the bottom, guys that actually played some right field, but they weren't given an opportunity, not any real opportunity. Also on that list of right fielders that at least played some out there, Adolis Garcia, Randy Arozarena, and Lane Thomas. So I would maintain, even though, once again, I appreciate the fact that John Mozeliak owned up to this and said, basically, we have failed to get that next guy, you know, and that's on them. You need to produce elite bats in your own system. We haven't been able to do that. He acknowledges it. But I guess this is where I get off, I get off this, you know, that this particular mindset of like kind of poor Cardinals is a terrible tragedy. The biggest tragedy is a loss of two lives, but this really did impact the Cardinals and the way they're put their teams together. And they've never really gotten over this. Well, first of all, they haven't gotten over it, but we're talking about a very promising young talent, but he still only had 87 games in their uniform, right? And the other thing they've had, I mentioned it again, you know, they've had 10 years to find that next guy. So I'm not going to give the Cardinals sympathy in the immediate aftermath, absolutely. But this didn't happen 3 years ago. This didn't happen 4 years ago. It's been a decade, okay? And I just don't see where I kind of have to bow my head and talk about what a terrible setback this was for the Cardinals, as if like their failure to find the next guy, because baseball changes, players come and they go. Some go in an unbelievably, unspeakably bad way, like Oscar Tavares. But my point is, it doesn't matter what the circumstances are. You always have to have the next guy in line or the next guy on the way. And they haven't been able to do that. It's been 10 seasons of baseball. So I can't give them a pass on that. I don't think that John Mozeliak's looking for a pass on that. But I'm a little less sympathetic only because of the 10-year season frame. I'm less sympathetic than I think maybe some of you are or some of my media friends and colleagues are. So anyway, I guess we're never going to know, but there were some concerns there. And it, certainly by now, the Cardinals should have had the next guy in place. It still could be Jordan Walker, by the way. Be very, very premature to like write him off. He's still their best chance for that if they're going to keep him in right field, which they say they are, but we'll see. Hey, that'll do it for now. I hope you took something out of this. I appreciate you for watching and being committed to watching the Bernie Show channel here on YouTube. Thank you, thank you, thank you, as always.